it's Alton Brown. This is the Alton Browncast, recording once again from my luxurious, it's not really luxurious, but it's a trailer, here on the top secret lot where we make Cutthroat Kitchen. And you're hearing the air conditioning cycle off because it's hot as hell here in the valley, actually. Oh. You know, for this time of year. Anyway, let's get down to business. I have with me a guy that I've never actually had the opportunity to finally sit down and have a chat with, Jeff Murrow. Most of you guys know him, the Sandwich King.
How you doing, Alton?
The actual king of sandwiches. I'm not going to say why you're here. Actually, I guess we can't air this until after everybody knows that you're going to be on Cutthroat Kitchen. But yeah, he's going to be on Cutthroat Kitchen. But we're not going to say how he's doing.
No.
That wouldn't be right.
I could be kicked out.
So I have always wanted it, because I don't know that I ever really got to tell you this, but you know, the day that the one day that we worked together on Star,
on Food Network Star,
season seven.
Wow.
At the end of the day, I wrote your name down on a piece of paper and gave it to one of the producers.
I already
knew you were going to win.
Really? That was the first day.
And I'd always wanted to tell you that. And the reason was simply because you already knew exactly precisely what it was you were going to do.
Yeah.
And you knew how to be in front of a camera. And that is the thing. That can't be taught. It's innate. You either do it or you don't. Which is why shows like Star even continue, because you can't bottle it. Did you know that day you had it?
I think just the gravity of just walking into there, and I expected 11 other competitors plus me, but we had 15 to start out with, and we were in the hall, you know, you're on the outside the Chinese theater, and all this stuff is happening. You get thrown into a Buick and then whisked over here and
a luxurious Buick, of course. Wonderful to drive, I might add.
Not as nice as this trailer, but it is the greatest. It is like literally driving on a cloud of air. But
yeah, from Switzerland, Swiss air or something.
For sure. So, but that first day, I was like, I'm going to lose. When you first see all these people, there's like model types and beautiful people and skinny, muscular people. And you're like, this is, I thought I was walking into a bunch of, you know, maybe homemakers and chefs and all these people. But I was very down on myself at first, especially after that first kind of quick challenge we had,
right.
Star Challenge,
right.
Which I did all right, but I laid out my case from the first thing that I'm going to be the king of sandwiches here, and I'm going to only make sandwiches in a show about it. So I think once I was 2-3 episodes deep, I knew it was mine to lose, I'll say. If I messed up, if I got too homesick, I could definitely get myself in a bind.
Was that a real problem?
Huge. I mean, I've never been... I'm generally a happy-go-lucky guy, but...
Just back off just a little bit. Start over that.
I'm generally a happy-go-lucky guy, but I 3 weeks in, and I was gone for 10 and a half weeks. I mean, with one phone call every maybe 10 days that was videotaped with my wife. My son was 2 at the time. He can't communicate over a phone.
No. And luckily, he doesn't remember it.
No, he doesn't. So it was, you miss. The hardest part about it was about 3-4 weeks into it. I don't know if the brain went on kind of, you know, protection mode, but I forgot how my son walked, how he talked, how sounds emitted from his mouth, you know? It's like I couldn't conjure up a memory of him, and that was, like, super scary. Where there were moments where, you know, you're showering at 4:15 a.m. in the morning, you know, getting woken up with a camera in your face, and you have minutes to get ready and get out the door, and you have no idea what's going on where you're sitting there in the shower. And, you know, I'm not a big crier, but I cried once during competition in the shower, which is where I usually do all my sweating. And once right before I left. And I still tell my wife, my happiest day, the happiest day of my life, not to slight our marriage or the birth of my son. It was all beautiful. But it was when I came home from 10 and a half weeks of being gone, knowing I was in the top 2. I wasn't crowned the winner yet. And
wait a second, there's a crown?
I'm still waiting for it.
What the hell?
You just get your own show, which I guess is good. But I came home, my son, I got out of the car, and my son ran out, my wife ran out. He was like, Daddy, miss me. And that was his version of, I missed you, Daddy. And not only did I kind of conquer this dream that I spent literally 12 years, I, you know, went to culinary school, and I have all this background in improv and comedy and all this training, and moved to LA to try to start my own my own cooking show for 4 years and failed. Moved back to Chicago, but I lived with my in-laws for a year, saved money for a house. So I'm walking up to this house that was only 2 months old before I went away to Star. I have my son. I had my dream set. I knew I had it in the bag, even though I wasn't crowned the winner yet. I had my wife, and I was like, that day when I came home,
the
happiest day, I had it all. And I didn't, like, do it in a dishonest way. My father didn't give me a cooking show. You know, I was I believe I earned it, and it made it all the sweeter. You know, so.
Was there ever a moment during the competition where you thought, "I don't want this. I don't want this this bad. I'm not willing to go
midway
through
when you're like, I just want to go home," or when you're in the top four, and by that time we're in New York, and we're just like, "I just want to go home. I just want to watch TV. You know, I want to sit down at a dinner table with my family." That I never said I don't want this, but I said maybe two or three times I don't mind coming in second. Maybe it's better just to then I'm not bound.
But what would have happened then? I mean, you had put so many years into basically getting to this point. You know, mm-hmm. with the improv, a lot of things that other people don't go through.
Yeah,
if you had been second, what would you have done? I mean, where would you be now? What was the plan B?
Plan B was, you know what, do my best. A producer will see me and give me my own show regardless. And I think maybe in the beginning days of Star, that happened with, you know, several people, you know, like Kelsey Nixon, who's got, you know, a successful show on the Cooking Network, Cooking Channel, I'm sorry. And, you know, a couple of Tom Pizzico was in, you know, season before me. I was like, you know what, you can make a career. Maybe it's not huge and glamorous, but maybe I don't want it. But obviously, I roll out of bed every morning and be like, thank God I won and I stuck to it. There's a point where I just shut down. Unless I was talking on camera, cooking, in interviews, dealing with the producers, I go back to the house and I just, you know,
stop.
Whatever. Just stop. Just kind of crawled in a hole, a mental hole, and just recharge for the next competition.
How many episodes now of Sandwich King?
We have five full seasons. Well, the first season was six episodes and four full 13-episode seasons. So that's, you know, 61 or
something. Screw the math. Is it what you thought it was going to be?
It's a lot of work. Cooking, people think you show up to set, you cut a piece of meat, you throw it in a pan, and yeah. then you walk away after saying stuff.
Yeah, I know.
We do two a day. It's a 14-hour day. All the pressure is on you. Even if I have guests in my last act, it's still
no,
all the
you're
pressure.
Carrying. You're carrying the room.
I write all the recipes. I test all the recipes. I come up with the concepts. So I love it. And luckily, you know, we have the new show, The Kitchen, which is with four other Food Network talents, which kind of is like my playful show. You know, Sandwich King's my flagship.
Sure.
I love it. Hopefully I have it forever. If not, as many episodes as they're willing to give me. We'll see what happens with the six-season pickup. But The Kitchen is like now playing, and that's doing very well, and that's just almost creating an improv troupe.
I understand. I mean, I used to feel the same way with Good Eats and Iron Chef America.
Oh.
Good Eats was the flagship. It sucked the life out of me on a day-to-day basis, but then I could go do, and it took 3 days to do one, and then I could go do Iron Chef America where we did two a day.
Yeah.
And it was basically going to culinary school and not shutting up for, you know, a couple of hours at a time. But so I know what you mean by that.
It's all exhausting. People think it's, you know, I mean, you do. I believe I won the lottery. And I'll never give this up. I love it. I've always wanted to be, you know, an on-camera personality, and I think I've achieved that.
You have.
But at the end of the day, it's still work. You talk on camera for 14 hours a day, stand on your feet. You know, even, like, people touching your skin all the time is gets a little annoying, you know? I'm not...
No, and that's why it's like I found that you just got to minimize it. So, like, yeah. I tell makeup people, like, you can put some powder on me when I get to set. Otherwise, mm-hmm. I look like I look at me alone. Because that's just one more little... My pet peeve is being poked at by audio people, microphones, and being poked at constantly about that. So that's why I always on this show, I always put my mic in my tie because they won't screw with it. But I know what you mean. I mean, yeah. It's still labor, and it's very labor intensive. And when the weight of a production is on your shoulders, you're the sharp end of the stick, and everybody knows it. And well, you got what you asked for.
Exactly. And I, you know, obviously I feel blessed and I'm happy. And you know, but there's moments, like any job, you know, you get annoyed and you have the things. And there's the hardest part about this career is the uncertainty of the next day. You waiting by the phone. Are they going to pick up their show? Are my agents going to call me with a deal?
Yeah.
Am I going to get to do this? Because I don't get a paycheck every 2 weeks. There's, you know, you can get paid for a whole season of show and not make any money for 6 months. And then the taxes come. And it's there's all the same stresses. Just you get to see yourself on TV.
Do you watch?
I watch. I try to. I probably see 90% of every piece of TV I put out there.
Okay.
Sometimes I can't watch. My wife wants to watch. And then I'm just like, I can't deal with myself right now. I just came back from New York. I just shot for 3 days. I'm sick of myself. Please. And then she puts it out, and then I end up watching. I just end up watching all whole hour of it.
I remember when I'd been on long enough to where I actually found myself just, you know, clicking through channels and clicking past myself without hesitation. Absolutely without hesitation.
Not even being like...
Not even an eyebrow going up. So not like, oh, that's me. You just go right on past because that's just another guy blabbing his mouth on television.
By the way,
and maybe that's healthy. I don't know.
I think I tweeted this to you. Your mustard video was brilliant, by the way.
Thanks. That was actually fun. That... Last year, I finally actually shot that last year.
Where oh, really?
It was just kind of, yeah, those are almost a year old because I couldn't figure out what to do with them, except now just give them away. But, you know, the whole thing of just, you know, every now and then you just want to make stuff for yourself.
Yeah.
And not for somebody else and not buy another script.
You know? Right.
So what will, I mean, now that you've, it's easy enough to say that you'd like to do Sandwich King forever.
Uh-huh.
But you got to already be thinking about the next thing, about what if you had it
yeah.
your way, if you could write the, you know, the blank check. What are you thinking?
I think eventually, and this is what I said 3 years ago after all this started, and the people like, what is your dream? What is your number one goal? Where do you see yourself in 5-10 years? I love to host my own talk show, late night talk show. You know, food heavy, music heavy, comedy heavy.
So you're gonna have to fight me for it.
That's
my dream too. That's it. That's been my dream.
I'll
for
take
a while.
The daytime first. You take the night,
oh, and
then we'll
share it.
Then when
yeah,
you
I'm
retire,
sure.
no, you've been at it longer than me. You deserve it first.
Oh yeah, I'll probably wear out. I'll wear out sooner. I'm older. You know, but you know, it's funny. I think that you know, even 5 years ago, that was probably an impossible thing.
Yeah.
But food continues to show itself as being the kind of subject that you can wrap anything around
yeah.
if you come at it from the right angle.
Very true, because, you know, obviously everybody needs to eat. Most everybody needs to cook in the world. But
except New Yorkers.
Except
New
Yorkers.
Just go out.
They just
yeah,
got they a just hot plate, yeah. and they never use it.
Yeah.
They just go out to eat, which in case someone else is cooking their food. But, you know, people are like, why are chefs rock stars now? Why is this the new rock and roll? It's because, you know, it should have always been the new rock. I love rock and roll music. I played guitar 23 years. It's like my second passion. But
got a guitar.
Do you got really?
My Taylor Minis.
Oh, very nice. I might have to pull it out in a second. But it's like, it's so tangible to the public. You know, you can sit there and watch a show on Food Network and make your best version at home. You know, it's, you can buy the ingredients. You can't watch Keith Richards play, you know, from a 1978 concert in London and be like, I'm going to tune my guitar like him and open G
well,
it and slide my fingers down the neck.
Not without a full bottle of Jack Daniels. And probably, what year? 70 what?
78?
Some heroin. So, yeah, then, you know,
allegedly.
It's a little tougher.
Or no, did he go down for it?
No, he didn't. Well, in Canada, he got off. You know, he got off of the game. But that was pre-78. But
that was pre-Toronto
just saying that
mayor,
none of us
Rob Ford, right?
Yeah, none of us are gonna do that.
Of course not.
About that.
Oh, I just saw a documentary on Muscle Shoals. Have
sure.
you seen the Muscle Shoals? And just
yeah,
the
sure.
Keith Richards interviews are the most priceless thing in that whole documentary. But his, like, fingers, you know what I mean? Even his fingers look like they smell like whiskey and cigarettes. That's amazing.
Well, they do. Permanently. Permanently smell like that.
So, yeah, I think that everybody can relate to it. And that's why you're like, you know what? These guys are, you know, they're fun to watch, but I can also... hopefully replicate what they're doing with some ease.
I never thought about that. I never actually thought about the fact that, like music, you can listen to it and then go give it your own tribe.
Yeah.
I always just kind of thought that it's... When people ask me about why is food still so big, I say because it's the last common thing we all have with each other. Mm. You know, in this day and age, you know, with the internet, and we never agree on anything anymore, but we all like food, and it connects us to each other. But I never thought... I mean, you're right. I mean, it is the thing that anybody can go... and try it.
Yeah.
And give it a shot. And of course they can't taste what we're doing.
No. No, but they can try to taste it. Yeah, at home.
Sure.
With minimal investment. You know,
do you ever think that that food media is got some things going on in it that we should be worried about, or do you think that there are things going on in the world that kind of get laid at our doorstep?
I think there's, you know, there's too many shows that make it really hard for the chefs to complete a dish in a normal fashion.
Yeah, everything has to be timed. Everything's got to be timed. And at least on this show, we're going
to... I think there's... With all the blogs and online forums and stuff, mm-hmm. there's too much that people take as gospel without trying to go... So a lot of people, a lot of restaurants, a lot of small chefs, they get buried before they even have a chance, you know, to flourish. Whereas, you know, with...
Do you think that too many chefs just set out to be TV stars now?
I think
or
so.
Or cooks, and they don't really even want to cook for people or feed people. They just want to be on TV.
I think that's the number one goal. And I think there's so much out there for them to be a part of. There's so many platforms where they can be
right.
on television that I don't know if people go to culinary school anymore to really cook in a kitchen. You know, I went... I knew what I was doing. I was 25 when I went back. I was already hustling. I already worked 5 years previously in a kitchen, so I knew how to cook. I just wanted to legitimize myself, but I knew darn well that I was going to be on TV cooking one day. Mm-hmm. So I went for that purpose, but I knew I had... I've been wanting to be on TV since I was a kid, you know, and I knew I could never be the greatest chef in the world. I knew I was never going to be the funniest stand-up comic in the world, but I can damn well be the funniest chef in the world. And so that was my goal, where I think a lot of people go to culinary school now that might not have both gifts. Like you said, you see a lot of people go down in flames on Star because they seize up on the camera. They just think, well, I'm pretty.
I love to cook,
you know, and that's, you know.
I hear that over.
Oh, my God.
When I went to culinary school, it was before, you know, food media hit big. And when I told people why I was there, that I was trying to get the background to make a food show, everybody thought I was insane.
Yeah.
Nobody does that.
Oh, you were a pioneer.
About? I was a pioneer. I was just, you know, the desperate loner out there who everybody said, no, that's not going to happen. Forget that. You're going to be, yeah, go away.
Yeah.
But now, you know, when I go back and speak at culinary schools, and you probably have this happen too, it's I think that there's like at least 65% mm-hmm. of that student population is seeing a star on a door.
And, you know, you can't fault them for that because it's an alluring occupation.
Is it? Is it alluring?
As I sweat in your trailer here on some back lot in Burbank.
Back lot in Burbank. We're in the Valley, baby. We're not even in Hollywood. No, you're right.
I don't know. You can't fault him because it is. You know, everybody, the fame will always exist in some capacity, whether it be music, art, you know, film, television. And people will always want to be famous. But I think some of my, not to quote any, but there was a lot of people on Star who I think just wanted to be famous. And I think that separates the people who have passion, who have maybe some legs to win the competition, from those who don't. You can't just want fame. You need to want to entertain and teach and cook and know how to do all three at once while, you know, 17 cameras are in your face and someone's prodding with your microphone and powdering up your face constantly. So,
yeah, if there's one thing that, you know, I've only been really working on Star for... three years, mm-hmm. but if there's something that I hear over and over again that just, I'm not going to say it grates me, but, you know, when people talk about how much they want it,
yeah.
I don't care how much yeah. you want it. I care about how much you're going to earn it. How yeah. much do you want me to want you
yeah, yeah,
to
yeah.
do it? People think that their passion, no matter how unfocused or how it's not backed up by actual capability, they don't care. They just think that passion is enough. I want this.
Yeah.
I want to be a star.
I want this more than anybody.
More than anybody or anything.
This is my dream.
But see, you actually calculated out, you worked out a skill set.
Yeah.
So by the time that you got your shot, you knew you had skills. You knew what to do. You knew how to cook this. You knew mm-hmm. you know what angle to go for.
Yeah.
You stuck with a point of view, which is vital. You know, you got a brand.
Some people come with the, you know, good food. You know, or
I love big flavors. that's the one that I like so much. Bold flavors.
Yeah.
I love bold flavors.
Rock and roll food.
Rock and roll. Yeah. Okay.
But you're the pioneer. I mean, I watch your show. High school, end of high school. You know. And you, since you had that, and I was always a huge SNL fan, I still never miss an episode. You're the first one to do essentially sketches with characters.
Comedy. Yeah.
And sketch comedy. So you were the one who kind of been like, okay, I get it, because I can relate to Mario with his Italian sensibilities and, you know, obviously Emeril with his bamming and trademark, you know, just flair. But you made it possible for me to know that comedy can...
Oh, heck yes.
Be in cooking in an irreverent sense, you know, not in a...
My thing was that, you know, you can't educate people unless you entertain them first.
Mm-hmm.
At least I didn't think you could.
No.
And we used to have a sign over the door in our studio that said, laughing brains are more absorbent.
So,
and I grew up in the age, I mean, I remember tuning into the very first Saturday Night Live episode.
Oh, I'm sorry.
When I was in high school, the very first one, and life was... changed
yeah.
by Saturday Night Live. Everything in my life actually was changed by Saturday
really?
Night Live. Through the late 70s and the end of the 80s, you know, I mean, I was, it was like church in a way. It was life-altering. So to hear you make that reference is something I identify with.
Well, that was, you look at my eighth grade yearbook and it says in 20 years, you know, I will be on television making people laugh. And the person, no, in 20 years, I will be on Saturday Night Live doing Da Bears and Pat.
Da Bears and
Pat. So I used to do a solid Pat. And, you know, Julie Sweeney, very great character. And, you know, in 20 years, I will be on, you know, television or something. So I still have that same book. And I still never miss an episode of SNL. Hell or high water, good or bad, I still defend it. I still think it launches more comedic careers. Plus, you know, a lot of people from Chicago get transplanted to there.
Obviously.
Which I think is the funniest city.
From Second City, of course. I mean,
so it's, you know, it's always been an inspiration to me. So, you know, kudos to you for kind of making me believe in myself.
So actually, I'm responsible for your career.
Yes, you are.
That, perfect.
So I'm going to give you 10% with the other fools in my corner.
Now, I actually deserve more than whatever your agents are getting, and I don't even know who your agents are, but you know, we all have to have them. Agents and lawyers.
Oh, God.
There's the Warren Zevon song says, lawyers, guns, and money. You know,
may he rest in peace. Well,
yeah, still kind of miss him. So you're on Cutthroat Kitchen today. We can at least admit that.
Yes.
Something you think is actually going to be fun for the rest of the day? Or
I think so.
You know, things are going to get worse.
That's what they keep telling me. It gets worse and worse. And I don't know how much worse it could get at this point. I think it's a lot of fun. I've done Chop twice. I've done Guy's Grocery Games. I have competed in Food Network Star in, you know, 30-something challenges.
Yeah.
So I'm no stranger to cooking at high-pressure situations.
Nope.
But this is by far the most fun I've had. The anxiety, of course, is there pre, you know, before somebody opens up a dumbwaiter and throws your whole world into a tizzy.
Yeah, but you're used to having things thrown at you and cooking under time. So I actually, I mean, I think you've got the advantage here.
I'd like to believe so. But this still, when you're cooking on this show compared to the other shows, it's more fun because of those curveballs. It really is fun. I'm having a very fun time today. Thank you.
Well, it's time to let you get back to the fun. Thanks for being on the show, Jeff.
Oh, can I just win just for doing the podcast?
Yeah, sure. I'll go get you the money. Hey, food fans, if you've got a weakness for funny food songs, large and unusual culinary demonstrations, and puppets, you might want to catch my live touring show, The Edible Inevitable Tour, which is coming to a town near you. Just go to www.altonbrowntour.com and click on shows to find out where you can catch the action.